Good evening and welcome to Sports Day, on a day in which Australia's summer of tennis remains in limbo and members of both the men's and women's tour have aired their concerns over 2 weeks quarantine and then going straight into the first Grand Slam of the year. Craig Tiley confirmed to players via email last night that they would not be able to arrive in Melbourne in December as previously planned. What we can tell you tonight on Sports Day is that there's a range of proposals on the table, including playing warm-up events inside empty arenas to maintain players' quarantine, and secondly, that the decision on when to allow players into Victoria now rests with the Victorian government. Premier Andrews and his team clearly apprehensive about a mass influx of visitors following the botched hotel quarantine. But honestly, whether the players come in December or January, what's the difference? The risk surely remains the same. The players, well, they're not happy. They want certainty and concerns are growing over the potential for injury if they're required to quarantine and not train at the same time. In fact, some behind the scenes are even contemplating staying away from Australia altogether. Now, there is no doubt at all that we have to get this right. We cannot, by one iota, risk a third wave in Victoria. But remember too, the Australian Open is our biggest annual event. It brings in millions of dollars in revenue for the city, and this year provides an opportunity for Victorians starved of fun and enjoyment to get out there and experience life again. Surely we deserve that. Now, no doubt, players must play their part and reduce their entourages. It can't be a free-for-all. But conversely, the Andrews government needs to provide some certainty and decide whether it's Arthur or Martha in terms of whether it wants to host the Australian Open and the entire summer of tennis, or whether the risk is too great. 13-13-32, sporting fans, this affects you. Should the government budge and allow players to arrive in December? Also, what's your feeling around the Australian Open? Tickets are going to go on sale next week. Will you be snapping them up, or are you just apprehensive about attending a major event at the moment? 13-13-32, the round of golf at Club Mandalay to give away. Shane McGuinness alongside Jimmy Bartel. Evening, Jim.
Evening. Great intro, Shane. A couple of points I took out of that is, firstly, the Victorian government. And it leads to, I guess, the question you asked to our listeners is, would you be snapping up tickets? There's no way I'm buying a ticket.
You're not going?
No. I think you're probably safer to be around the city with all the stuff that goes on outside of the Australian Open, where you can sit on the hill there, you can watch outdoors, you can get some food. You can enjoy it. If it looks like COVID's about to break out, well, you don't go along. It's a safer financial.
Absolutely, it is financially. And look, Tennis Australia knows what they're doing. They set up those big screens on Birrarung Mar. And
yes.
Again, I presume they'll do something similar this year, albeit in a COVID-safe manner. You're a big tennis fan, though?
I love tennis. I love going along to the Australian Open. I probably actually enjoy sitting on the outside in Birrarung Mar.
Birrarung Mar.
I got that out eventually, but I enjoy it because I can get something to eat. I don't have to wait for service ends to get out to get an ice cream or things like that, but that's just the way I like to watch tennis. But the point I was sort of making the first is 2 days ago, we were going to have all tennis in Victoria.
Yep.
Then we had Mr. Andrews, school principal, everyone else, and goes, no, you better run that past me. And then today, in the morning, he's deflected, not up to me, it's up to the feds. Mm. And then the feds are going, well, no, it is up to you because they're arriving in your state.
Well, let's think about it for a minute. You don't have to be Einstein to work out immigration. They've allowed actors and actresses into the country. They've allowed the Indian cricket team into the country. So the Australian federal government clearly has no issue with foreigners coming in if they do the correct quarantine. However, coming directly to Melbourne is clearly an issue for the Premier and the Victorian government. Now, I can understand, once bitten, twice shy, the hotel quarantine situation. I understand it. However, if these players and their entourages, and I get those entourages should be reduced, whether they're coming in December and doing their quarantine then, or coming in January and doing their quarantine then, the risk remains exactly the same. If you don't get hotel quarantine right, either in December or January, we're stuffed either way.
Well, I think you've just answered that. If they don't believe that they can do the quarantine, they have no faith in their own ability to learn from their mistakes. Surely you're not cut and pasting the last time you did hotel quarantine. But that's important as well. We know tennis players are precious by nature. They got to have everything right. They got to bring the whole entourage and the support crew and things like that. It just can't happen. We can't have – there's 550 players. Conservatively, yep. We're looking – and plus, we're not even mentioning umpires and all the other bits and pieces that come along with the tennis tour, the travelling roadshow. 2,000 people. That's a bit different from a cricket team or an actor or an actress.
Oh, absolutely. And it is a big throng of people, and I have no doubt it will be reduced as to how much media comes out this year. Support staff has to be reduced. But they have to make a decision, the government. They have to get people decide what they want to do. Do they want to quarantine in December and start the summer of tennis in early January? Or do you put at risk the current dates of the Australian Open and bring quarantine into January? Personally, I don't think it makes a difference. What do you think? 13-13-32.
So just clarifying, is it a Dan Andrews decision or a ScoMo decision?
To me, at the moment, it is, they've got to work in tandem with each other. Immigration is a federal issue. However, allowing people into Victoria, as we well know, is a Daniel Andrews decision. Now, for mine, the Australian government as a whole has let foreigners in. Again, I use the Indian cricket team, I use actors and actresses as examples. They're just public faces that we know of. However, people coming, international travellers coming to Victoria, as we well know, there are no international travellers arriving in Victoria at the moment. So again, the Premier has to back himself in that he can do quarantine correctly this time and allow the tennis players into Victoria. They will be the first international people into this state.
So what we could, though, have a situation when the is it Monday that we're allowed to travel to New South Wales?
It's certainly next week, yes.
And they're taking internationals.
Yes.
So there'll probably be a situation where they're all flying to Sydney.
Yeah.
And then just then make the next hop down to Melbourne, won't they?
Then take a bus roadshow down through Albury-Wodonga.
Or a flight to Melbourne.
Correct.
So they'll just go through that way. So there's ways around it.
13-13-32. The issue is that if they quarantine in Sydney, will they have access to tennis courts? They can't do 14 days quarantine and not do any training at all. They have to be able to train. So that's the issue. The belief is through Tennis Australia, they fly into Melbourne, they're in a hotel, they're shuttled to the tennis centre or the like, they train, they're shuttled back.
A bubble scenario.
Correct, a bubble scenario. And they need to be in Melbourne to be allowed to do that. And to do that, they have to be allowed to stay in a hotel. Shane in Mitcham, welcome to you.
Yeah, g'day. Thanks for having me on. Look, I think the Victorian government really needs to take this as a chance to prove they actually can do what they're saying to us all around management of international visitors and also quarantining. And it's a really stepping stone to all the other events that are due to possibly appear here, like the Grand Prix in March also. So I think, you know, if they think they've got a report that says on their improvements, then surely they've got to trust they're employing the right people to do the right things and not botch it again, is my view. And we need international visitors and we need high-quality sports back in Australia.
Shane, appreciate the call. The other thing I'm hearing, and this has been reported in other media too, is that the government, the Victorian government, is waiting for the results of the hotel quarantine inquiry, which comes out on December 21. Now, surely you don't have to wait for the hotel quarantine inquiry to work out how to do hotel quarantine, given other states have been able to do it faultlessly.
But how would they be waiting on results when no one knows what happens?
Well, I think they're hopeful that the hotel quarantine inquiry might have been able to make a conclusion.
I know we're not a political show, but like,
well, but if that is what they're waiting for, then you go, well, hold on. Surely we work out what the problems were of guards fornicating and, you know, just make sure there's no fornication and everyone does the correct job.
It's, you take the old opposite day. Everything we did last time,
don't do it again.
Let's just do the opposite.
The George Costanza principle. To Burwood. G'day, Dom.
Yeah, g'day, fellas. Yeah, good to talk to you. About buying tickets, there's no way known I'd buy a ticket. I mean, have a look at the 25,000 proposed at the MCG. Eight people lining up for food, social distancing in toilet. You don't even know if you're going to be able to sit next to anybody. I mean, you just wouldn't buy it. And the real big issue down the track, the AFL is going to be unbelievable. I know Carlton have sold 50,000 members and they've got basically 30,000 people renewed their reserve seats all sitting next to one another, which is not going to happen.
It's a good point, mate.
So is what will happen with the tennis? And actually, ANZ put out an early release email today. So
Homelines are dropping.
They put out their exclusive ticket pre-sale for the Australian Open, tickets to go on sale on Monday. It says, when purchasing tickets, you'll be asked to select from available groups of seats called fan pods. So, Jimmy, you and I could go to a fan pod and sit next to each other, but we would be separated by an empty seat from another fan pod.
Like they're doing at the cinemas.
Correct.
They're actually already sort of blacked out the seats.
Correct. Out to Donald in regional Victoria. Hi, John.
How are you, mate? Jimmy, what was that word you described tennis players as?
Was it precious? Precious? Did I use
something
it?
Like that? Yeah, well, I've got two comments, righto.
Yeah.
One of them, the first one, them and the Grand Prix guys, and like Djokovic and those, have already had the disease. I dropped them off about 2 miles north of Christmas Island, righto, and I'd let them swim into the joint, and I'd set up a couple of tennis courts there for them to play on, and a little Grand Prix track, and they all can run around that, because I wouldn't pay two bob to watch any of them. But these people, they ignore everything. They just think they can go around and do whatever
not
they want to do.
Not all of them, though, John. Not all of them.
No. Well, if you've got the best player in the world who thinks he can do it,
yeah,
doesn't that put a bad stream on everyone else?
John,
so I wouldn't even have them in the country.
John's making a good point. They've had some bad PR when coronavirus was absolutely thumping around the world.
Yep.
They were. It says Zverev was partying.
The Andrea tour that Novak Djokovic did, it was an unmitigated disaster. I totally agree with that. But I think, sure, the vast majority, there's always the minority, but the vast majority want to come out here and play. And I think Melbourne would be a pretty lonely place in January if we didn't have the Australian Open.
I don't mind his idea of Sports Island. Imagine if you converted Phillip Island into Sports Island.
Tell you what, there's a very big difference between staying on Christmas Island and staying at Crown Towers for the 2 weeks leading up to the Australian Open. Out to Bulleen. Hi, Barry.
Oh, g'day, boys. Love the show. Hey, cheers. What about we put them on Manus Island? Put them out of Manus Island. Oh. They get some good training there. It'll be about 50 degrees up there.
It's hot and
humid.
Hey,
Jimmy, I love your point. I love your point, mate. You wouldn't be buying tickets. You'd have to have rocks in your head to buy your tickets at the moment. But listen, I don't really like sitting at the tennis anyway. Like, if it's a hot day, it's like 33 degrees like today, you'd be sitting there with no airflow. It feels like 50. It's just not a enjoyable experience anyway.
He's 100% right.
I'm surprised. I thought people would be snapping up the tickets.
I
love it.
There would still be plenty to snap it up, but like, they're just the uncertainty. You're going to be forking out your heart.
But if it doesn't go ahead, they're not going to keep the charge.
Yeah,
we hope not.
We've got nearly half of the state who is battling at the moment for expenses, you know, already. To fork out for something that you might not go ahead, well, you might not get your seat.
Yeah, no, I get that argument, but I also think it will bring a lot of joy and a great distraction to people by being able to get together with a group, go to the tennis. It can be an expensive day out, but it's also great revenue for a lot of those businesses that use the tennis in terms of catering and merchandise and the like.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that's why I'd love to go down. And, like, you know, I love the outside and, you know, they've got it all set up and there's different names every year for all the outdoor entertainment. That's probably where I'd be leaning to this year.
Let's head up to Brisbane. John's listening via the app. Evening, John.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Yeah, good.
Good. Listen, I think this is a no-brainer. No one is going to buy tickets. I agree with the other callers. You just postpone it till the vaccine's available.
He'll be postponing it for at least 8 to 12 months, though, John, by the time everyone gets the vaccine.
Yeah, but put it this way. If you go into lockdown again, it's not going to happen.
No, I agree with that, and that's why you have to get the quarantine right. I mean, the players have to be quarantined in a hotel, in a special bubble that they can train and then go out. Look, they were able to do it in Paris. They were able to do it in New York. Now, I know those two cities have far greater concentrations of coronavirus than thankfully what we do, but it was not there within the bubble of players. Do we just stop, Jim, until there's a vaccine? I can't see that happening.
No, we
can't stop international sport.
No, you can't stop the world. Full stop. We need to
put in the
moving
protections.
Yeah, there's so many things in place. I heard today that there's low numbers. There's no numbers. We're 20 days with zip.
Yeah. Now, look, it is still out there. It is still a risk. We are still in the midst of a pandemic. I get that. However, we have to find a way in order to mitigate there not being a third wave, by all means. But I still think we have to ensure that we can have our enjoyment too with the Australian Open.
Why aren't we just testing the players before they get on the flight?
I totally
agree. So they're flying in COVID-free.
They should be tested 4 days in advance, 2 days in advance, again at the airport.
It's January.
Test them halfway across the Pacific for all I care.
Test them now. Test them once every 2 weeks. Well, why wouldn't you do that leading up to the Australian Open? It's one of their four slams. It's what they prepare for. So just start... Once every 2 weeks, go get a COVID test.
If I was playing for $3 million, I'd take the swab up.
I'll take one every day.
Exactly right. Nick and Hoppers Crossing, you'll be our last before we move on to a bit of footy.
How you going, fellas?
Yeah, good, Nick.
How about we send the Premier to Manus Island and leave him there and lose the key and just leave him there and quarantine him for 28 years? How about that one?
The Andrews Open sounds like that has been building from our callers.
Nick, fair point. I reckon a few people might agree with you. Another caller who didn't want to come on the air said, what about the F1 at Albert Park? Massive teams that travel with each manufacturer. Seems as though it's simply assumed that the event will go ahead. That's something the government's going to have to weigh up too. It's all well and good saying that tennis players have to bring in their entourage and they can only bring four or five with them. But you look at the Formula One, you can't cut that entourage. You need everyone who comes with those teams.
Would it be fair to say if you could get the Australian Open away successfully, you can do in any international sport?
100%. That's why it is so important, not just for the Australian Open, but for the Formula One, and I think significantly for the AFL as well next season.
Yeah, because you've got people coming worldwide, the numbers, the logistics involved, everything.
You get it right now, it bodes well for 2021. Jimmy Bartel is alongside me for Macca's. Macca's 30 Days, 30 Deals is back, and this is Sports Day. Oh, thanks to Kia and Red Energy. Welcome back to Sports Day on this Thursday evening. Shane McGuinness alongside Jimmy Bartel. We're here for Red Energy, born and bred in Melbourne. That's Red Energy. And for Kia, the all-new Kia Sorento has landed. Yesterday, Jim, we spoke with Steve Hocking after the AFL brought in a few new rules. Fair to say, the interchange rotations have certainly caused a little bit of frustration within the playing fraternity. One of your former teammates, in Patrick Dangerfield, echoing his concerns today about rotations going down from 90 to 75. Before I get your take, let's hear a bit about what Patrick Dangerfield had to say earlier today.
Look, not particularly. I think even though this season presented us with a reduced number of games, it was also one of the longest seasons we've had, given when we started pre-season, the break in playing and training, and then ultimately when the season concluded. I think to go into a season next year and producing interchanges, I'm a bit of a sceptic on it still, as I suspect quite a few players will be. But you know, the changes have been made, so we're just going to have to live with them as players.
Is it unfair on players, especially obviously the midfielders who run more than the others, or is it, as Patrick Dangerfield says, something that they just have to suck up?
Well, they do. The rule's in. And then just let's preface this. This is just not Danger speaking. He's put his Players Association president's hat on here to talk about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, the old man doing his job.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sort of line. So even if he felt differently, he's got to represent the entire playing group. Now, I know from a playing point of view where his apprehension is coming from, because it won't be congestion. That means I'll stop running, because he knows damn right that the coaches will go, no, we still expect you to run and run twice as hard because it's a new season. We've got to up it. So that's where you can feel a little bit of his angst saying, I'm concerned because players will start popping injuries because the coaching staff won't expect you to go, oh, factor in fatigue. It's like, well, just suck it up.
Do you think the reduction from 90 to 75 is enough to have an impact on the game and on players in terms of doing those soft tissue injuries?
I hope we don't see a spate of them. But you've got to remember, when you put a focus on it, and like we did this year because of the shortened season, short breaks, as soon as someone did a hamstring, we just went, oh, look at that. But if you actually go back through each year, there's nearly 25 to 30% of the entire AFL total players are on the injury list at any one stage. Most clubs carry 8 players on their injury list, which is a quarter. So there's injuries every single season. We're trying to reduce them, but they just happen. There's injuries, there's impact injuries, there's hamstrings, there's players who are underdone, who are overstretching and things like that. I like that they didn't make the big drastic, you know, the headline act of 90 to 45. Let's just be smart about it, especially coming off the back of the year we did, 90-75. Hopefully it doesn't feel that great for players. And then the next year, look at going from 75-60. I feel that's the way they're trending.
The other big story today surrounds the VFL, which will trial more starting positions, i.e. on the back of a boundary throw-in, ball ups around the grounds, kick-ins. You will have to be in those starting positions, like similar to the 666 that we have at set of ball ups. At the moment, VFL players not happy, feel like they're being treated like guinea pigs. Former Port Melbourne coach Dave Dunbar has accused the AFL of destroying the VFL competition, turning it into quote-unquote a Mickey Mouse competition. The other concern is for players who might be dropped down to VFL level, Jim, they'll be playing with different rules as to what they are in the seniors.
Well, if you've come into the game from out of the TAC Cup in the last couple of years, they're not too foreign to you. Yep. Because they do that, but they do two pairs. They just have to get back inside forward 50. The thing also that sort of just got snuck in there with the three pairs going back, one has to be back in the goal square. So one lot of pairs has to be in the goal square at either end. So you don't want to get too far away. I know there'll be a lot of players who just want to park themselves in the goal square and they'll be happy about that. But I can see the sentiment from likes of David Dunbar, who's a very good VFL coach for quite some time. You just feel like you're not treating our competition seriously, because not only with those rules that come into place, there's a lot of restrictions on the age, because you've got to play a certain amount of players from a certain age bracket. And it is shaping up just to be a development competition.
It's a rock and a hard place, though, for the AFL, because they have to trial a rule as significant as the starting positions. And if they're not to trial it in the VFL, then where do you trial it? That's where it's going to have its greatest impact and give the greatest amount of evidence.
I guess the only way off the top of the head, and you want to see it with AFL players doing it, is when clubs do their intra-clubs or they nominate, say, for example, Geelong playing North Melbourne. We did a couple of those because obviously the Scott brothers, the relationship out there. When they do those, you go, look, can you trial this out for us? Can we film it? Like, you can take a long way around to doing it, but I guess putting it straight into a competition where points are on the line or a premiership to play for, you can see coaches seriously try and coach it.
And a bit of news just before we get to the break. Out of the Cats, defenders Tom Stewart and Jack Henry have re-signed, while Jack Stephen has called time on his career after 192 games, just the 1 year at the Cats, but a four-time Best and Fairest winner at St Kilda. Time for a break. More of your calls, 13 13 32. We're also going to be joined by Kevin Shifter Sheehan. The AFL draft officially announced today. It's not too far away. What will we be looking for? And in this COVID world, what will draft night look like in 2020? We're here for Giant Bicycles. We're still riding with you. This is Sports Day. A bit of news around in terms of team delistings. The West Coast Eagles today delisted former Swan Lewis Jetta, Richmond Premiership forward Jacob Townsend delisted by the Bombers today. I know you're a big, big NBA fan, Jim. NBA draft day today.
Yes.
Very well done.
Yeah, they do an excellent job. They normally do it live where actually you can get booed. Imagine the greatest highlight of your juniors wanting to play NBA. You get drafted and they boo you.
Welcome to professional sport. Yeah. But a great result for LaMelo Ball, who our listeners would know played with the Illawarra Hawks last year. He was picked 3 with the Charlotte Hornets. In fact, to get him to the Hornets, owner Michael Jordan, yes, the Michael Jordan, had to tick off on it. Yep. Not bad having MJ tick off on you coming to his club.
Yep, ownership. Look, he embraced Australia really well. Look, his family creates a lot of media press wherever they go, but he and his brother both being drafted in the top three NBA draft, and also Aussie Josh Green. Yep. Yes, Josh Green, my apologies. Pick 18 goes to the Dallas Mavericks, a D&3 man. Fantastic. Another Aussie in the NBA.
Now, come on, Jim. You're a board member at Greater Western Sydney.
He was an
academy-listed player at the Giants, and yet he moved back to the United States, and here he is now playing with the Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah, like we touched on a little bit earlier, he's probably going to get taxed what he would have earned in his whole entire lifetime.
He wouldn't have been fitting him in the salary cap, I can tell you that much.
Not at all, but great result. And there'll be a lot of free agency and movement going on. Everyone's obviously following Ben Simmons and the 76ers. They've done a lot of moves as well.
Do you reckon, we're about to talk to Kevin Sheehan in just a moment, do you think the AFL will have looked at today's NBA draft to just see how they did it, given the virtual nature of what's required this year?
Yeah, I think they'd look at it, but also we've got future trading of picks one round. You can only see next step is 2 years out.
Yeah.
Because you'd imagine the Josh Dunkley deal would definitely get done, wouldn't it?
Well, that might be a question for our next guest, Kevin Shifter-Sheen. He's going to join us after this on Sports Day. We're here for Tyre Power. Save on selected Falcon passenger and four-wheel drive tyres. Buy three, get one free at Tyre Power. Sports Day for Kia and Red Energy. Welcome back to Sports Day on this Thursday evening. Shane McGuinness alongside Jimmy Bartel while Jared and Sam enjoy the week off. Well, the AFL draft was confirmed today for Wednesday, December 9 at 7 p.m. That is when the AFL draft will officially get underway. It's about a week and a half later than usual, yep. Jim, which isn't too bad given the season proper itself was delayed by about a month in the end.
Give us all a chance to breathe and get the kids, most of them got to do VCE or enter sort of exams.
Correct, and I think most of those are out of the way and they can start turning their attention to the AFL draft. One man who knows it all is the AFL's talent and draft guru. He joins us on Sports Day, Kevin Shifter-Sheen. Kev, good evening to you.
Yeah, Shane and Jimmy, great to be with you guys. Yeah, so the poor boys, they've still got their heads down. Actually, most have got about a week to go before they finish those Year 12 exams. And then all of a sudden, they won't have to wait too many sleeps for their big night, as it'll be. Just for one night only, this year is the draft goes virtual. Given all the restrictions in place now around Australia, they'll stay at home with their family and friends and watch the draft, which will be on Fox and obviously AFL.com and KO, and if they do come through on that particular night, or would they have to wait another day because the rookie draft's at noon the next day, along with the preseason draft. So at least it's happening, because it's probably been in doubt as the year unfolded here in Victoria for the boys playing in the NAB League. There just wasn't any footy. We've finally got at least that selection meeting on in December this year.
Shifter, it's been a tough year, as you mentioned, especially for those Victorian boys who didn't get to play in the under-18 competition. Do the recruiters have enough knowledge in the bank on previous years to know who the players are that they want, or would they have looked closer as maybe previous years to result in something like the AFL Combine?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Jimmy, you probably answer it yourself. I think you're probably a back-to-back All-Australia that in the under-18s as a 17-year-old, very prominent, then again the next year. But so the boys that did very well as 17-year-olds, they're safe bets. The stars of that were, there's plenty of, there was an Australian under-17 game last year. The best boys played against New Zealand. I was reflecting on that, looking at the stats of that game and some vision in the last couple of days. I think 17 out of that game will get picked up for sure. They also played many of those grand final days called the Futures game, where there's 50 players in Australia played, and many boys did very well on that. So that gave them a great basis. The ones that will miss out are those that just shone in their 18th year, later developers, if you like. I remember Toby Green was unknown in his 17th year. Jack McRae, unknown, couldn't get into the NAB League in their 17th year. Superstars within a month of their 18th year starting, and took off and had all Australian under 18 years that year. So there will be some like that. The later developers will probably have to wait another year, but the comps will go to under 19 next year to give them that safeguard and that additional opportunity. But yes, so there'll be some very stiff, and the club recruiters, they need those crystal balls out. They need to be shining those at the minute as they try and predict the future, because it's not as easy to see as it normally is with the Victorians not playing, and the rest of Australia playing at least at state league level that didn't get the chance to play for their state at that higher level of national championship, which is normally the proving ground. Do well at that, you're almost guaranteed that you can succeed at AFL level.
Kevin, the big question is, will Adelaide keep the Western Bulldogs honest, or will they just pick, you know, he'll be a top two or three pick, Riley Tilthorpe, the South Australian kid, big ruck forward, star in the making. Will they just pick him number one and get it over and done with, or will they just go straight off the bat and keep the Dogs honest by bidding on Hugo Hagen?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, Jimmy, that one. I suppose to give a personal opinion here rather than, I don't know what they'll do, but tell you, if I was at a club that was last on the ladder, I'd be giving some good news to the supporters and the fans, and I'd keep the number one and announce the player I believe to be the best, and it wouldn't be one that's going to be taken in by another club, and given them you're handling the mantle over of the number one player in Australia to another club, because the Bulldogs would match that bid. And it is subjective as to who the best is. You know, Jamara Ugal-Hagel didn't play well in that game against New Zealand early in the year, but by the end of the year, he was playing some great footy. Riley Filthorpe, if you just talk about him for a moment, he's a precocious talent. He's been playing senior footy for a couple of years over there. He's 201-centimetre kid, centre-half forward, can back up on the ruck. That standing player right through his 16th year, where he's All-Australian as well. But there's others in the mix. I think that a kid called Elijah Holland should be right in the mix. The boy that he comes from the Murray Bushies, he's got a little bit of Stevie J about him, if you know what I mean. He's mercurial. He does some special things. He's 189, a lovely size. A little trap here is he did his ACL in the preseason, so didn't play after dominating his 16th and 17th years. Best on the ground and all that stuff we just mentioned, the Futures game and the game against New Zealand. Star for Vic Country last year as a bottom eight in the National Championship. So he's got to still be in the mix because I think he's going to be a star player down the track. So, and look, Adelaide have not declared what they're doing. They're still having a good hard look at the way in which they might allocate that privileged number one choice.
You mentioned Elijah Holland. He'll be a top 10 pick, but it looks like not just the first round. If I narrow it down to the top 10, there's a lot of tools this year, a lot of exciting tools. We mentioned Filthorpe, Ugal-Hagen, Logan McDonald as a key forward, Granger Barras. There just seems to be a lot of key positions or tall players this year in the top 10.
Yeah, I miss Logan McDonald for a choice for number one. He could go number one, that boy, the one you mentioned. He's 196. Forward. Think of the Riewoldt boys, you know, with Nick, that guy that keeps in his wonderful career that went number one way back in about 2000 or 1999, back around that area there, 2000 I think it was, and Nick's brilliant career. McDonald played all year at senior level over in the Waffle and made the team of the year at senior level. Now that's a rarity for a boy of 18 years of age to dominate against the under eights players, the men over that way. And he's a kid that, at under 16 level, he jumped straight in front of all the recruiters' eyes when he first played for WA against Vic Metro, kick six. Hello, who's this fella? He announced himself a few years back. So he's right in that mix-up around number one. And then the other hyphen, we mentioned Ugal-Hagen, but this is Granger Barras. Denver Granger Barras, what a name. He started one of the biggest underage games of the year last year when WA defeated Vic Country in what turned out to be the grand final of the under 18 national championships. He was fantastic across halfback, intercept marker extraordinary, and that's in his bottom age year. So he's right up there in the mix. Some real good tall players. Zach Reed is another boy, 202 centimetres. I think he's in the best 10 or a dozen as well, a boy from Gippsland Power. But for a boy, some of these boys, look, the way he kicks the ball for a 202 centimetre is just staggering. Athletic and just uses it well on the way out. And he might have a bit of Harris Andrews about him, that young fellow. So, you know, there's a lot for the clubs to be encouraged about if they've got choices, certainly in the top 20, because I reckon it's going to be as good as most years. But there will be some boys very stiff that just haven't had that chance this year. To show their great growth and development in this most unusual year for footy, as well as for our communities.
Absolutely. Shifter, always great to catch up. No doubt we'll do it again before the draft. It all happens Wednesday, December 9, and you can see it live on Fox Footy or via the AFL app. You're listening to Sports Day for Red Energy, born and bred in Melbourne. That's Red Energy and Kia. Just about there on this Thursday evening, Shane McGuinness and Jimmy Bartel, and it's time for our final word for Fujitsu. Experience year-round comfort with Fujitsu, Australia's favourite air. On the back of that conversation, Jim, Essendon can almost reinvent Tullamarine with picks 6, 7 and 8.
Yeah, certainly. Kevin Sheehan just nominated about half a dozen players that could be the pick one. So one of them's going to fall to you at pick 6, and there's Tools and smalls. I sound like Gary Ayres there. You got the tools and the smalls. They can have a real good mix there. They can pick probably two future key position players. As we mentioned, there's a lot of them in the top 10. And Elijah Holland might be there, who's got something really different about him as a midfield type.
If you're Adelaide, do you pick the pick one that is going to stay at Adelaide and then you can go into 2021 with the number one pick? Or do you go with Ugal-Hagen, who the Western Bulldogs can then bid on, and then they have the number one draft pick for 2021?
Well, you could take a bit of pressure off the player not being technically the number one pick. If you nominate Hugo Hagen to keep the Dogs honest, this is the question they're going to have. How honest do they want to keep the Dogs? Because it'll cost them points. Pressure on him, number one pick. Your player is technically number two. There you go. He's yours anyway.
Jeez, it could ease the maybe the Bulldogs hope they don't bid.
Well, it just all comes to points, draft points.
Correct. The draft, December 9, is when it will be. Thanks for your company tonight on Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy and Kia. Jimmy and I will be back tomorrow from 6. Talk to you then. Welcome to a second hour of Sports Day on this Thursday evening. Shane McGuinness and Jimmy Bartel with you. It's all thanks to Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. And don't forget, check the fire danger rating this bushfire season. Check daily. Go to emergency.vic.gov.au. In the hour ahead, two of the world's biggest sports come into focus. It was NBA draft day in the United States. Some good news for an Aussie as well. Also, the A-League season is just 5 weeks away, but for the Melbourne Victory, competition football in the form of the Asian Champions League starts next week. Their boss, Grant Brebner, to have a chat. But as we've been doing all week, it is time to continue our assessment of each AFL club's trade period. Tonight, we're having a look at the two Gs, Geelong and the Gold Coast. Jimmy, let's start with your former club. And I mean, it's fair to say that as soon as Greater Western Sydney matched the deal with regard to Jeremy Cameron, the deal to get Cameron to Geelong was always going to be the biggest story of the trade period.
Yeah, of course, because it created history. It's the first time a club's ever matched the deal. Normally they just take their compensation pick and away they go, much like our SN did with Joe Danaher. They took the compensation pick. That was inside 10. But for someone like Jeremy Cameron, who David Matthews, the CEO, described as the best player in the Giants' short history, pick 11, which we all have discussed, will probably go out to pick 14. It's not enough. And so the upsetting thing for Geelong was the fact that they had to pay out of their own pocket, not use the AFL's pick. And then once players weren't offered up or willing to come to the Giants, well, then the obvious thing was the three first-round picks. Could the Giants land the three first-round picks? Yeah, because they had a lot of players who left through trade and free agency or choose to play elsewhere. So a number of picks went to the Giants. But for the Cats, this reminds me of the year when they went out and got Scott Selwood, Patrick Dangerfield and Lachie Henderson. They had them on the radar for a long time and they went out and got them. So it's Jeremy Cameron, Sean Higgins, Isaac Smith, the last two very, very experienced players but offer a lot to the club. We've heard Stephen Wells earlier in the week say that Sean Higgins will fill the Gary Ablett role, play a lot forward, come on ball, creative, great ball user, inside forward 50. And Isaac Smith probably gives them that little bit of run, which when the Cats got beaten or played poorly, they were very slow with the ball. He'll be one that will help them speed up their game.
You can just see by the fact that they bring in Cameron, Higgins and Smith, they've only got draft picks 51 and 96. They're just topping up the Cats. It's about capitalising on this group. Yes, they've lost Gary Ablett and Harry Taylor through retirement, but there is a sound belief after making a grand final this year that premiership, that elusive second one for Chris Scott, is right there in front of them.
Yeah, the majority of their list, well, they're 22, or the squad that they're going to likely run out with, 22, 25, 27 players, is 28 and older. Their best players are all 30 and above. Stewart's 28, Menegola's 29. So touch and go. You know, like you look at Selwood, Dangerfield, Hawkins, all early 30s, Higgins, Smith, all 30s. Even Jeremy Cameron will be 28 next year. So you're right. They've made a grand final. They continue to make finals. They get that home ground advantage down there and they'll have another crack at it. They're not going to be in the draft this year, but they've got some pretty handy picks for next year's draft. And what you do as a supporter of your club when they're not in this year's draft, you start spruiking about how good next year's draft's going to be.
And of course, you're able to do that now through the trading of future picks. Do you like the idea of Isaac Smith going down to Geelong and providing that extra run? As you mentioned, I don't think many foresaw him going to the Cats initially. Melbourne was certainly on the radar, potentially that two-year extension with Hawthorn, but obviously he's eyeing what would be a potential fourth premiership.
Yeah, along with Joel Selwood too. If he can snag a flag for the Cats, he'll be a four-time premiership player. He was, remember, young in those days, a 7 and 9 and 11, so it'd be a good way for him, for a premiership captain of the Geelong Footy Club. But Isaac Smith, as I was touching on, I feel where the Cats fall down is when they don't have runners with the football. They don't move the ball quick. You have a look down back, they're all kick first. They go very conservative. At least Isaac Smith, they can get back behind the ball. He can run and carry. Will Clark play a lot more footy down there? And Sean Higgins, we know how creative he is through a stoppage. His form at the Kangaroos is absolutely brilliant. Stephen Wells admitted they wanted him a year ago. Couldn't quite get the deal done, but now he's there.
Are you disappointed to see Nekiah Cockatoo leave?
I am, because I know he's got huge potential and upside, but he's been constantly injured. The Cats have always rushed him back in the side, probably underdone. He needs a fresh set of eyes, a freshen up, and also think maybe a positional change for Nekiah Cockatoo. I think just playing forward doesn't help his football. I'd like to see him go back and play a little bit of halfback.
Certainly regarded at Brisbane, goes up there. Of course, they're looking just to go that step further and reach a grand final next year. And then the other one is Lachie Fogarty, who's made his way to Carlton. Stephen Wells told us earlier in the week that he inquired about a trade to Carlton. Wasn't fussed if he stayed at Geelong, but obviously maybe looking for a few more opportunities, and Stephen Wells and the Cats were able to facilitate that trade.
Exactly right. So two first-round draft picks go out for the Cats. You forget Cockatoo, and Fogarty was a late first-round draft pick, you know, in the 20s. You know, still a first-round pick. You know, so they would have loved to hold on to them both, but as Nathan Buckley said, if you hold on to them both, all of them, you have a list of 150. He probably just looks, even when he's fit and going well, he's still not getting picked at Geelong.
Let's have a look at the Gold Coast Suns. Interesting past year for the Suns. 5 wins and a draw, but they had just the 1 win from their last 10 matches. So it's, again, a disappointing back half of the year. They bring in Rory Atkins from the Adelaide Crows, Oleg Markov, who wasn't even in the squad for the Tigers grand final, and then they lose 2-meter Peter, who's gone to Essendon. Your thoughts, firstly, on Rory Atkins and Oleg Markov. Start with Atkins, because at his best, he was awesome for the Adelaide Crows.
Yeah, and again, and we touched on the Cats with Smith, that outside run. He will provide that for the Gold Coast Suns. He's a pure wingman. There's not many of them in the game anymore. You're probably Sam Walsh, Mitch Duncan, Gaff are the ones that spring to mind. Rory Atkins is a pure winger. He doesn't come inside. He doesn't play anywhere else. He just plays on the wing, and he's creative with the ball, and he just runs up and down. So he's a bit of a point of difference for their midfield. And Oleg Markov is the same. He plays wing, halfback, mainly halfback, and run and carry. And look, they didn't have to get deep into the draft because they've got, remember, those special, call it compensation picks or rules where they can just take kids in their zone, pretty much all of Queensland and Northern Territory, for nothing. They don't have to spend a draft pick. There's a couple of really talented kids who will just come straight onto their list. They don't have to cough up spots. They've got the extra spots on their list for them. And they would have been top 20 players.
For the Gold Coast this year, Jim, next year, 2021, is it about seeing those top draftees that they've brought in over the last couple of years take that next step forward? Now, arguably, you don't need to see Matt Rowell take another step. He was awesome in the 3 games that he played this year. But the likes of Isaac Rankin, Noah Anderson, Jack Lekosius, to see them mature that little bit more and all of a sudden, I guess, be able to run out an entire 22-game season as opposed to the first half of the year and start to fatigue later on.
Yeah, correct, because after round 5, they're abysmal.
Yeah, like that. Absolutely.
The record says it, but I'd like to see them all stay fit and healthy. That's been, I think, the big issue for Gold Coast Suns. Hopefully they invest in their football department in that area, strength and conditioning, also your physios and doctors and things like that. Because when you go back to the birth of Gold Coast Suns, they had a similar group of talent, but they just never played together. Can you remember how many times Prestia, Swallow, all those sort of guys, even when Caddy was up there, Gazza would have thought, 2 or 3 years of pain and I've got all these young stars around me. The frightening thing about this group is they seem like they all want to stay. Like they just
seems to be the difference this time around.
Yeah, there's a bit of a different edge about them. You even hear them speak in the media that I think they like the idea of creating their own history. I don't think a lot of them are using this as a stopping point. Now, if they stay together, they could be anything. Isaac Rankin, his first couple of goals in AFL football were extraordinary. You mentioned Lekosius as well, beautiful ball users. They've got a good blend. They've got tall midfielders. They've got in and under, strong, powerful ones. Matthew Rowe was leading the Brownlow after 3 games. And King and his pairing with Day.
I've overlooked.
And they've got players who have been on their list a couple of years. With the rest growing, they've started to hold down positions down back, even Bowes and these sort of players. They're just building nicely.
Interesting you mentioned Ben King, because I think there was a belief amongst St Kilda fans that he would come down and join his brother Max at St Kilda. He recommits. Obviously, Rowell, Anderson, Lekosius, they all commit. Rankin as well. Very different to the first time around under Guy McKenna. That you're right. They do not only want in with this group, but they want to try and set that course for history that, hold on, we're the ones that got the Gold Coast to their first final series. We got the Gold Coast to arguably their first grand final. That's the belief that's instilled in this group at the moment.
It'd be a pretty cool thing to do. Yeah. AFL footy, you don't get those opportunities anymore because, you know, most clubs, what, Geelong's 160 years old. Mm. Like Essendon and these clubs, 120, 140, 150 years old. You can't be the first of anything.
And we saw how special it was for your boys at Greater Western Sydney last year. Now, yes, were they overawed on the day? They were. But there was that enjoyment and that thrill of making that grand final. And they're all the better for the experience as well.
Yeah, there's certainly an energy about it. I think that's what you're touching on as well. But you've got to see what's going on in the AFL world. Players either really want to be in the footy bubble, or we're seeing a lot of players going, get me out of here. Mm. Like, I'm happy being the footballer on the weekend, but go to training. As soon as I leave training, I'm hitting the coast, I'm going fishing, I'm playing golf. It just depends on personality types, and players are identifying that a lot more these days.
So the Suns bring in Rory Atkins, Oleg Markov, as we say. Peter Wright goes to the Bombers. The Suns, they've got one pick inside the top 10. No doubt they'll nail that, as they have in recent years, pick 5. Then they go to 27-37, so still a few good young talent you would expect there, 76 and 84. Well, we just see kind of what's left of the crop. And certainly another big draft coming up for the Gold Coast Suns.
Just reading, as you said, that the Suns will probably only take one, maybe two picks, because they've got those couple of kids that they get a free grab anyway. Jeffries is one who would have been a top 20 talent. It's just because of list spot. So they'll probably, this year you're allowed to only, you can take only one person at the draft you want. I think the Suns might only take about two.
Yeah, and again, if you've got pick 5, you definitely use that, and obviously 27, maybe 37, but you're right, and especially with the smaller list sizes this year. That's the Suns and Geelong knocked over. Tomorrow night we'll have a look at the Giants and the Hawks. No doubt the man across from me can give us a nice little insight into how the Giants are setting up for season 2021. Remember, being prepared for fire could save your life. Download the Vic Emergency app at emergency.vic.gov.au. More Sports Day right after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. You're listening with thanks to Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Well, Jim, I get the feeling you didn't do much today because on ESPN front and center was the NBA draft. It was very well done.
It always is. They do these events, and I think this is what the AFL is always aspiring to. And I know the hardened AFL traditions go, we're not America, but they do this well.
Oh, absolutely. Be it the draft, the Super Bowl, whatever, you take the ideas and you run with them. And the draft done virtually this year, given COVID, I think was probably maybe a preview to what we might see for the AFL draft in a few weeks' time as well. Olga Ulick is the Aussie NBA expert for ESPN, and he's been kind enough to join us on Sports Day. Olgan, welcome to you. A massive day. Firstly, what did you think of the coverage, the way that it was done by the NBA and the way Adam Silver delivered the picks?
Look, given the circumstances, and especially in that country, it's probably as good as it was going to get. I think the interesting thing is, you know, usually we see at least the main guys in that room, in the green room, at you know, their respective tables, and, you know, we see them and they, you know, kiss their family, and then they go up and shake Adam Silver's hand. It was kind of cool to get a camera into the homes, or at least the places where these guys were filming, you know, their respective selections, and just seeing their family and speaking with their family and hearing their stories properly, I thought that was a really cool element to it. So as far as the way this thing could have gone, I don't think they could have done it better.
Jimmy is the NBA connoisseur around here, so I'm going to give you over to him in a moment. But I do have to just point out two of the highlights from an Australian point of view, that being LaMelo Ball heading to the Hornets with pick 3, obviously the team owned by the legendary Michael Jordan, and then Josh Green from Sydney picked up by the Dallas Mavericks. Let's start with LaMelo Ball. Pick 3, was that about right after he pretty much missed the back end of last NBL season with the Illawarra Hawks?
That's about where most people had him. You know, going into the draft, you assumed that if those top 3 teams were picking for fit, that's you know, what we were getting. So Anthony Edwards was going to go to the Timberwolves because they don't need a point guard, they don't need a big. James Wiseman went next because he's the big guy. The Warriors did need a big, they didn't need a point guard or a wing. And so then, you know, we get to that third pick. The Hornets don't necessarily need a point guard because they do have Terry Rozier and Devontae Graham, But, you know, if you point to those two guys and then you look at the potential of someone like LaMelo, it's pretty clear that you'd rather go all in on someone like LaMelo Ball, you know, a guy who's still really young, really talented. His ceiling is tremendously high. You'd rather go all in on someone like that than you know, stick with Rozier and Graham. But look, after his season with the Hawks, which it was impressive over the 12 games that he did play, you know, that top three pick, if he went number one, it wouldn't have surprised me, right? He's maybe the best talent in this draft. Number three is right about where he should have gone.
And Josh Green at pick 18, was that a surprise or was he always predicted to go top 20?
So in my mind, I had Josh Green going anywhere between 15 and 25. It was a really broad range. And if I was to guess, if I was a betting man before the draft, I would have put him in the early 20s. There are a few teams there, a few contenders there who did like him. Going to the Mavericks, it didn't surprise me, but it was a pleasant thing to see and a pleasant thing to pop up. And honestly, when you look at Green and the way he plays, you know, a really solid 3-and-D guy, I think his shot is underrated. I think he's maybe the best defender in the class. When you look at that fit next to, you know, the team that the Mavericks have, they have Luka Doncic, who's their ball dominant guy, one of the best players in the world. Kristaps Porzingis is also such a dominant player in the NBA. Putting a complimentary guy like Josh Green, a proper 3-and-D player in that system, I think it's the perfect fit for him.
We mentioned LaMelo Ball, and of course, we're always going to have that connection with him because he played out here, Rookie of the Year in the NBL. But his dad, LaVar, he can rub him up the wrong way, to say the least. But he's got two sons now who have been drafted in the top five in the NBA draft. He's laughing, isn't he?
Oh, as in, if you're just worried about someone's pockets, you know, awesome. And even, look, if you speak just personally and just as a dad, you look at what LaVar Ball's done and what his children have achieved, and, you know, you can't be mad at that. It might not be ideal where they ended up. You know, I bet he doesn't want Lonzo in New Orleans, and I don't think that being in Charlotte is the best thing in the world for LaMelo's brand. But I'm sure if LaVar just steps back and looks at, you know, just in totality, he's got two kids who are top three picks. That's a win if you're a dad, right?
Massive, massive. Now, everyone's fascinated with the Philadelphia 76ers. Of course, Ben Simmons there. There was a lot of discussion. Do they blow it up as far as that combination with Embiid, Simmons and Embiid? Can it work? Looks like they're going to run it back, as they say, another year. But they made a big move anyway. So they moved on Al Horford. How are the 76ers looking?
I think they're looking really good. It's really weird. When you think of this time last year, everyone was thinking, are the Sixers going to be amazing defensively because they added Al Horford, they added Josh Richardson. What happened today? Well, they traded Al Horford, they traded Josh Richardson. And, you know, you mentioned the idea of blowing it up, and it's a really popular idea. And if they did it, I don't know if anyone would blame them. But the idea of someone like Daryl Morey coming in and looking at the roster and saying, let's give this Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons partnership one more crack, but let's actually surround these guys with a team that can, you know, actually be efficient on the floor. And so we have these two really dominant inside guys. Let's put shooters around them. And so just today, the Sixers added Danny Green and Seth Curry, right? Terrence Ferguson hasn't proven himself to be a shooter in the NBA yet, but he was a shooter all through high school and throughout his junior career and with Adelaide 36ers. So, you know, things are looking up for Philly. You've got Ben Simmons, you've got Joel Embiid, and now you've just put spacing around them. That's all they needed.
The AFL here in recent years has now moved to trading future picks, only 1 year out, but the NBA, that just goes to another level. You can trade 3-4 years in advance. You can do pick swaps. You can do them conditional where they, you know, where sides finish. They even had today a pick swap where a team was able to buy another team's draft pick. Is that something that's just another level on top?
Yeah, I think it is. So the Rockets purchased the Pistons' 2021 second-round pick, and that pick was via the Lakers. So they spent $4.6 million on that. Now, the two interesting things that I think have come from that is $4.6 million is a lot of money, right? And I think the reason why the number was so specific is I think the Rockets right now are sort of just shedding guys, right? It was almost like they're about to give up. They're about to start a rebuild. And so I think throwing that $4.6 million number out there is a good way of saying, hey, look, we're also willing to spend on some things. And explicitly, we're willing to spend on our future. The other way to look at it is, we've seen what the Oklahoma City Thunder have been doing, just collecting draft picks. You know, they've been collecting first rounders, but it's just pick on pick on pick. And so we see how valuable picks are in the NBA today. And I think this is just a perfect example of that.
We love buying our NBA tops. I've even still got the Durant one from back at the Oklahoma Thunder days. Actually, I've even got one from the Seattle Supersonics.
I had a Charles Barkley Phoenix Suns jersey back in the day.
Yeah, I've got the Supersonics one from Durant. Now, free agency is about to kick off. James Harden, does he go to the Nets? Westbrook, does he remain at the Rockets? He's got a big contract, which is scaring teams. It's just about to get wild and wonderful, isn't it, in the NBA?
Well, it's a really weird one because the actual free agent class isn't too exciting. You know, that it's not the sexy free agent class that we're used to seeing. I think it's just the players are becoming more and more empowered. They're looking to go where they want to go. So Russell Westbrook doesn't want to be in Houston. The Rockets have no reason to keep him there. Why would you keep a disgruntled star on your roster, right? So they're going to find a new home for him. And now James Harden has said the same thing. He's gone a step further and saying, I would like to go to Brooklyn. Now, can they make that work? Does Brooklyn have the assets to make an actual trade for James Harden? We saw this Drew Holiday trade where it was three first-round picks for Drew Holiday. If Drew Holiday is worth three first-round picks, what the hell is James Harden worth, right? And so it's going to be an interesting thing just to see if the Rockets do pull the trigger so quickly, because they don't have to. He's demanded a trade, but he's not forcing them to trade. They're not being forced to. So it will be interesting to see if he will be traded in the first place, because, again, you don't want to keep a disgruntled star. But at the same time, do they trade him to the place he wants to go, or do they just trade him to the team that will give them the best assets back?
Olgan, it's a fascinating time in the NBA. The draft was fantastic to watch today. Great to get your insights on it, and really appreciate your time.
Thanks so much, guys.
Olgan Ulic, Aussie NBA journalist for ESPN. What did you think of it today, Jim?
Oh, it was fascinating. He touched on the top three draft picks. They were the best three players, and then it just worked out to be what they needed as well. So they're able to fit both. You get the best player, but what your needs are. But it's so fascinating in American sports and NBA. They don't get sentimental. Like, if they don't think this group is actually going to win it, they don't like hanging in the middle ground.
Josh Green joins the Mavericks, a boy from Sydney. The Giants just looking back and thinking we had him as an academy player before he moved to the United States. Now he's playing for the Dallas Mavericks. Fair to say he probably couldn't match his salary that he's going to get at the Mavericks, but a neat story nonetheless.
He's probably going to get taxed what he would have made. although being in Texas, they got pretty favorable tax laws there, true. So he'll be just banking it. But Olgan did touch on it. He will fit the Mavericks nicely. They got two absolute superstars, European talents, in Luka Doncic and Kristaps Porzingis. And he actually fits them nicely. Yeah. He's a D&3 guy. He's the ultimate role player, which is you can make a great career and get paid a lot of money in NBA being a role player.
I did find it funny today, though, watching the draft pick 18, this guy Josh Green from Sydney, and then he doesn't even talk about basketball. He just talks about his time playing Aussie rules.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And just to put things in perspective with money, James Harden has a player option at the Houston Rockets, so he could choose to take up his contract, which would have netted him $50 million. Mm-hmm. You're in a pretty good space where you can say, no, I'm going to see what's going on out there.
You just put your $50 million to the side and I'll see what else I can get. ESPN basketball journo Olgan Ulic there for AusMade. Shop for authentic Aussie products. Choose Australian made. More sports day to come, all with thanks to Wilson Homes. Chat with one of their friendly staff today about personalising a home design to suit your individual lifestyle. Welcome back to a Thursday night edition of Sports Day for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Let's kick off this hour with a bit of A-League soccer. Jim, it just feels as though we've finished the A-League season, but obviously we're looking ahead to a new 2021 season. But for our Melbourne Victory, the work really starts very, very soon. They're about to fly out to Doha for their Champions League commitments. Their coach has been kind enough to join us on Sports Day. I speak of Melbourne Victory manager Grant Brembe. Grant, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Shane, Jimmy. Thanks. Looking forward to it.
Wonderful to chat. What's the feeling amongst the group at the moment, the fact that you are flying out to Qatar at a time when, I mean, coronavirus still is really hanging over our lives?
Yeah, look, I'd be lying if I said it wasn't something that was in our mindset. But we've had all the assurances that, you know, once we touch down in Doha, the place is safe. There's obviously Sydney and Perth are over there already, so we've been in contact with them about things on the ground. And we've had an independent doctor have a look at it, and they've given us the assurances that it's a green light to go. So, yeah, from that perspective, yeah, it's good, you know, for us to go there.
Grant, being a footballer and in your sport, travel is just part of the job. You fly around the world, you're in hotels, you know, you're in and out of buses. How's this different, though? How's the itinerary going to look?
Yeah, well, I think the biggest thing, Jimmy, is we've you know, coming from a base of nothing, because obviously we finished our season just at the back end of July there, and we've then had a period of time off. Lockdown's not been easy because we've not been able to have games. So our first competitive game is going to be on Tuesday night against Beijing, who are a powerhouse from China. And then we play every 3 days after that. We've got 4 games in 10 days. So it's going to be grueling, you know, and that's, you know, on the back of not knowing what our fitness will be like in a competitive game. So we're going to have to manage the squad. But, yeah, like, the way we'll treat it is like a pre-season competition in the build-up to the A-League.
Well, I was going to ask you that. You said the squad and the importance. You want to win every game. You ask any coach, any player, that, you know, if they're playing marbles, they'll want to win that. But how do you balance it? Like, you know, your formations, who you're looking to be in your starting squads when it does come to the A-League season. What's the balancing act like for you?
Yeah, look, it's difficult. We've done some projections on that. We played Beijing in, we'll call it round one, and then we play them again in round two, 3 days later. And we're taking two squads, but you just don't know who's going to pull up. You don't know how players are going to get through it. You know, we've recruited heavily in the off-season, and a few of the players have done the 14 days in quarantine. You know, you can't underestimate how tough that's been for the players sitting in their rooms. Yep, you throw in a bike, but you know, it's not the same as, you know, as Jimmy will tell you, as match fitness running around on a football pitch. So a lot of it we're taking on trust, and only, you know, the games will tell us where we're really at. But yeah, look, like I said, it's the A-League campaign we're still building towards.
You mentioned recruiting heavily. What did you identify that you needed the most at the Victory? Where was somewhere that you really wanted to bed down?
Yeah, we struggle really in leadership. I think, you know, last year when I took over the team towards the end, I always felt that we had to play well to win games. You know, and sometimes, you know, you can be standing in the tunnel and you have teammates that just, they just have a presence. They have that leadership. They can intimidate the opposition. I didn't think we had that. So, you know, I needed to bring some players into the club that, you know, are going to stand up for themselves, look after other players, lead this group, and obviously add to that the quality. So I think we've done that. We've still got another couple of players from overseas to join us at a later date. But at the moment, you know, the squad's going well. It's now just about, you know, gelling them together.
It's interesting the honesty you have there, Grant, about a leadership and having players that stand tall and that lacking. How important do you see that in sport, not just in football, obviously, your background, but just in sport as a whole, to have that mixture of leadership? And I guess the fact, if you don't have it, how devastating it can be to a team.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, even when I came here, we had, you know, the likes of Kevin Muscat in our team. And I know, you know, for a fact that we weren't always the best team on paper. But what we had was, we had, you know, that little bit of doubt in the opposition's mind, because Kevin was ruthless, you know, and he demanded stuff, you know, high expectations of us. And, you know, even if I wasn't playing well, he would still get me to perform at a level that was better than what I could have gave, because he would just drive me. And I think, you know, Jimmy probably had that at Geelong, you know, and listened to conversations that the players have had down there, that when you have that group of players that on your day when you're not playing well, you can still get the wins. It shows the measure of a good team.
Tell us a little bit about English pro Callum McManaman, a winger who Victory fans seem to be already pretty excited about what he could achieve in the A-League this season.
Yeah, well, Callum's obviously, he's been around for a while, but he's still in his 20s. He was, you know, 5 years ago, West Brom paid $4.75 million for him. And, you know, he's got an FA Cup winners medal as well. So he's a huge talent. And like a lot of players, and I include myself in that, when I was playing in the UK, I just wanted a change, you know. I just wanted to try something different. And, you know, sometimes your love for the game isn't what it should be. And we brought him here to reinvigorate himself, reinvent himself. And, you know, by all accounts, he's thoroughly looking forward to the challenge ahead. And, yeah, I think he'll be a great addition and you know, focus on this A-League.
Grant, is that a selling point for the A-League to get out of that English or European soccer bubble and, I guess, maybe reinvent yourself or get confidence back or rediscover your love for the game where, I guess, the attention and media isn't as intense as it is back home?
Well, in conversation, Shane, I had with a few players in recruitment, you can get a feel for who just wants to come and retire and who still wants to win trophies and who wants to, you know, kick on with a season. And it was funny because, you know, I spoke to some big names that they could have came here and done well. But that was our problem last year. And, you know, we finished 10th out of 11 teams last year on paper, fantastic names. But I think they just wanted to come and retire. So that was at the forefront of my mind in the conversation I was having with these players. How hungry are they to still, you know, win games and trophies?
Before I let you go, a quick update on Robbie Cruz. He's not heading over to Qatar. Had the knee surgery during the off season. Now, how's he setting for the A-League season proper?
Yeah, Robbie's in a good headspace. He's obviously had some challenges with injuries, but he's ahead of schedule, which is great. It'd almost be like a new signing for me when he does come back because he didn't play much football. But if he gets fit, if he gets, you know, back to a level which we know he's capable of, he just gives us another huge amount of firepower in that front third.
Grant, really appreciate your time on Sports Day. Obviously, a big campaign coming up in Doha, but then it gets a little bit bigger here at home, the A-League. And I know those Melbourne Victory fans are all ready to sign up as it kicks off on December 27. Thanks again for your time.
Brilliant. Thanks, boys. Thank you.
Melbourne Victory manager Grant Brebner, already 16,000 members have signed up and standing as one with Melbourne Victory this season. To get on board, head to gomvfc.com.au or give them a call, 1-300-GO-MVFC, to become a member today. I think this is a reinvention of Melbourne Victory, just the way Grant was speaking then. Jim, very disappointed with their season last year, albeit interrupted by COVID. But, I mean, Melbourne Victory is such a proud club. It's the Collingwood or the Richmond, if you like, of the A-League. They want to get their superiority back.
Yeah, they're a powerhouse. And it's fascinating that he touched on it was actually leadership, not skill and ability. And he is right. Some days your team just doesn't have it. They're just not, you know, operating on all cylinders. But it's what good teams do is they manage to find a way to grind out a result.
I couldn't agree more. And the fact, too, that, you know, you could get all these big names who want to come to Australia and retire and just enjoy some easy football. But he was like, I want guys that want goals. They want to win. They might go home to the UK and to Europe eventually, but I want players that want to be here. Great to catch up with the Melbourne Victory coach. The team heads to Qatar tonight to recommence their AFC Champions League campaign. First game back is, Grant told us, against Beijing FC on November 24. And Melbourne Victory currently sitting third in Group E. Good luck to the boys over in Doha. More Sports Day to come right after this. This is Sports Day for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. And just a reminder, set the alarm for Thrill of the Chase, Sunday mornings on 7-2. Well, earlier tonight, Jimmy and I caught up with AFL talent ambassador Kevin Sheehan about next month's 2020 NAB AFL draft, how we'll roll out and which names we might be likely to hear read out in the early stages of the night.
Yeah, Shane and Jimmy, great to be with you guys. Yeah, so the poor boys, they're still with their heads down, actually. Most have got about a week to go before they finish those Year 12 exams, and then all of a sudden, they won't have to wait too many sleeps for their big night, as it'll be. Just for one night only, this year, as the draft goes virtual, given all the restrictions in place now in Australia, they'll stay at home with their family and friends and watch the draft, which will be on Fox and obviously AFL.com and KO, and see if their dreams do come through on that particular night, or would they have to wait another day because the rookie drafts at noon the next day, along with the preseason draft. So at least it's happening, because it's probably been in doubt as the year unfolded here in Victoria for the boys playing in the NAB League. There just wasn't any footy. We've finally got at least that selection meeting on in December this year.
Shifter, it's been a tough year, as you mentioned, especially for those Victorian boys who didn't get to play in the under-18 competition. Do the recruiters have enough knowledge in the bank on previous years to know who the players are that they want, or would they have looked closer as maybe previous years to result in something like the AFL Combine?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Jimmy, you probably answered it yourself. I think you were probably a back-to-back All-Australia that in the under-18s as a 17-year-old, very prominent, then again the next year. But so the boys that did very well as 17-year-olds, they're safe bets. The stars of that were, there's plenty of, there was an Australian under-17 game last year. The best boys played against New Zealand. I was reflecting on that, looking at the stats of that game and some vision in the last couple of days. I think 17 out of that game will get picked up for sure. They also played many of those grand final days called the Futures game, where there's 50 players in Australia played, and many boys did very well on that. So that gave them a great basis. The ones that will miss out are those that just shone in their 18th year, later developers, if you like. I remember Toby Green, it was unknown in his 17th year. Jack McRae, unknown, couldn't get into the NAB League in their 17th year. Superstars within a month of their 18th year starting, and took off and had All-Australian under 18 years that year. So there will be some like that. The later developers, it'll probably have to wait another year, but the comps will go to under 19 next year to give them that safeguard and that additional opportunity. But yes, so there'll be some very stiff, and the club recruiters, they need those crystal balls out. They need to be shining those at the minute as they try and predict the future, because it's not as easy to see as it normally is with the Victorians not playing, and the rest of Australia playing at least at state league level, that didn't get the chance to play for their state at that higher level of national championship, which is normally the proving ground. To do well at that, you almost guarantee that you can succeed at AFL level.
Kevin, the big question is, will Adelaide keep the Western Bulldogs honest, or will they just pick, he'll be a top two or three pick, Riley Tilthorpe, the South Australian kid, big ruck forward, star in the making. Will they just pick him number one and get it over and done with, or will they just go straight off the bat and keep the Dogs honest by bidding on Yugal Hagen?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, Jimmy, that one. I suppose I give a personal opinion here rather than, I don't know what they'll do, but tell you, if I was at a club that was last on the ladder, I'd be giving some good news to the supporters and the fans, and I'd keep the number one and announce the player I believe to be the best, and it wouldn't be one that's going to be taken in by another club and given them you're handling the mantle over of the number one player in Australia to another club, because the Bulldogs would match that bid. And it is subjective as to who the best is, Jamara Yugal-Hagen didn't play well in that game against New Zealand early in the year, but by the end of the year, he was playing some great footy. Riley Philthorpe, if you just talk about him for a moment, he's a precocious talent. He's been playing senior footy for a couple of years over there. He's 201-centimetre kid, centre-half forward, can back up in the ruck, an outstanding player right through his 16th year, he's All-Australian as well. But there's others in the mix. I think that a kid called Elijah Holland should be right in the mix.
AFL talent scout and ambassador Kevin Shifter-Sheehan earlier tonight. Don't forget the thrill of the chase, the latest Greyhound news and feel-good stories this Sunday, 10 a.m. over on 7.2. You've been listening to Sports Day. It's all thanks to Wilson Homes. Chat with one of their friendly staff today about personalising a home design to suit your individual lifestyle. It's Friday tomorrow. Jim and I will be back tomorrow from 6. Speak to you then.